Chapter 3. Jonathan becomes an agent. Jonathan, the night manager, was now an intelligence agent. After their meeting, he did everything Burr had told him to do. He stole all the money in the Hotel Meister's safe the next day and immediately left for London. After long weeks of training, he arrived in Cornwall by motorbike on a dark and rainy afternoon. He stopped at the village shop to buy food and introduced himself to the woman there as Jack Linden. Then he rode his motorbike straight to the cottage at Lanyon Head. As soon as he had left her shop, Mrs. Trethewey called upstairs to her daughter to tell her that a nice young man had come to stay in the village. The villagers soon started to talk about Jack Linden. They talked about how many languages he spoke and how he walked the hill paths every morning with a bag on his back. They talked about how he was rich and how he liked Marilyn Trethewey, who he spent lots of time with. And they talked about how kind he was to lots of people, but never said a word about himself. A couple of months later, Jack Linden was seen in Falmouth talking to a large Australian man in a bar. The two of them were drinking beer and staring at a map. They had bought a boat business, someone in the village whispered, but the Australian man was not good at sailing. A week later, both men disappeared, and suddenly there were police in the village asking questions about Jack Linden and the Australian.
"The police think they were selling drugs," the villagers whispered to each other. "And there was lots of blood found at the cottage. They think that Jack murdered the Australian, but his body hasn't been found. And they say that his name wasn't Jack Linden at all. He's called Jonathan Pine."
Burr was sitting with Joe Strelsky in a large Miami hotel room that had no windows. Strelsky worked for the CIA, Central Intelligence Agency, in America. He was also interested in Roper and his deals with the drugs cartels. They were there for the first meeting of Operation Limpet. People from the British government were not usually invited to meetings about these kind of operations, but for something as important as Limpet, the CIA needed them there. Each person arrived quietly and gave their name and job. Catherine Dulling came from the River House. Rex Goodhue, who worked for the British government, was there with a determined face and smiled at no one. Geoffrey Darker, a small man with cold eyes, was laughing with a red-haired man. When everyone was ready, Joe Strelsky stood up and spoke for 50 minutes about the three Colombian cartels who had agreed to join together to protect themselves against three threats. The first threat was the United States, who were helping the Colombian government to fight drugs. The second threat was other cartels, especially in Venezuela and Bolivia. And thirdly, the Colombian government itself.
"During the last 8 years," said Strelsky, "different groups, including French, Israelis, and Cubans, have tried to sell arms to these Colombian cartels. Most of them have been quietly helped to do this by their governments. But the cartels haven't really been interested until now."
Then Strelsky turned off the lights and showed them a photograph taken through a window of some men sitting inside the offices of a Caribbean law firm. There were two white-faced men, who Burr recognized from Cayman Island banks, and he was interested to see Major Corcoran, with a pen in his hand and some papers in front of him. Next to Corcoran sat the handsome Lord Langbourne, adviser to Mr. Richard Roper. And across from them was a large Greek man whose face Burr did not know.
"Who took this photo?"
asked an American voice from the back of the room.
"One of our agents," replied Burr.
Strelsky began to sound excited.
"This photo shows us that the cartels have met with some big arms dealers."
Then he pointed to the Greek man in the photo.
"We know this man as Dr. Paul Apostol, lawyer for the drugs cartels. The men he's meeting with are friends of Richard Roper. We believe that Roper and the cartels are planning to exchange a large amount of arms for drugs."
Strelsky sat down, and Rex Goodhue stood up to speak. He was sorry, he said, that they were going after a British man, but happy that both the British and American sides wanted to work together to catch him.
"We have to stop the sale of arms in a dangerous area of the world, and we have to stop the sale of drugs in Europe," he told them. "We have to catch these men and show the world who they are and what they're really doing."
2 days later, Leonard Burr was in his office in London. He took a phone call from Rex Goodhue.
"The minister is worried about Operation Limpet, Leonard," Goodhue told him. "He's worried about the cost, and he doesn't want any trouble in the Bahamas."
"That's rubbish," shouted Burr. "There is always trouble in the Bahamas."
"And are you going to tell our friends at the River House about your new agent?" asked Goodhue.
"No way," shouted Burr.
"I know about Jeffrey Darker and his friends. I know about their houses in Spain and their expensive cars. We can't trust them. You know we can't."
And he put down the phone. Burr turned to a man in his office, Rob Rook.
"We're lucky. Harry Palfrey's an advisor to the government. He works at the River House, and he tells us what Darker and his team are doing," he said. "No one can know Jonathan Pine's name, not even Harry. And Jeffrey Darker must never know who our source of information about Roper is.